You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
In 2009, Irk went to the dark side and became a music podcaster. He discovered a wide, wide selection of music, apart from Dozy Do by Julie the Band. It's now 2010, and Irk comes down the pipe and into your ears, bigger, stronger and faster. Every Friday, it's Irk FM time. Now here's your host of Irk FM from Channel Irk, here's Irk.
G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to episode 73 of Irk FM. Irk FM is my music podcast that comes down the pipe and into your ears at the end of each week. Of course, Irk FM is my music podcast that is a part of Channel Irk. For more information, go to channelirk.com. Normally, Irk FM features some great independent and pod-safe music down the pipe and into your ears at the end of each week. But over the last few weeks, we have been featuring some interviews on Tuesdays. If you would like to check out some of the bands that I have interviewed, go to irkfm.com and click on the interviews, and then you'll see who I've interviewed. On the line now, we have a couple of members from the band Emerald, who I played a few weeks ago. We have Juan, and we also have Thomas. Hi, guys.
How you doing, Irk?
Nice to be here.
Hi. Thomas and Ivan here.
I'm doing super. How's things on your side of the world at the moment?
Cold. We're having some seriously bad weather here at the moment. And we've had to move from house to house just to get a connection. So I think we've been lucky to get a connection today.
Oh, okay. So, I've got no complaints about the connection whatsoever. Actually, it's sounding pretty good. Whereabouts are you guys at the moment?
We're in North London, a place called Barnet, actually, so in the UK. So we're getting, the weather's not too bad, but it's been pretty bad, so it's getting better. But yeah, it's all good at the moment.
A bit of snow, and it's all right.
A lot of snow. A huge amount, but we're recovering.
Oh, that's good. You know, lots of inside activities and probably a good time for some songwriting and rehearsing if you can all get together.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of that. We've been utilising the time well, actually. I'd say we're working on our next album, so yeah, that's what we've been doing, to be honest.
Awesome. So how did each of you get involved in the music game?
Well, me personally, I've only been doing it for about 5 years. I was playing in a covers band mainly in the UK, because I've been in the UK. I'm Irish originally. I moved to the UK about 16 years ago. And I started playing music over here about 5 years ago. I started off in a covers band as a drummer. And for the first 3 years, I'd done it, I really enjoyed it. And then I just wanted to be more creative and feel more fulfilled. So I wanted to start an original project, which I did in the latter part of 2006. So I went on the hunt to find good guys, you know what I mean? The best musicians I can get in each position, a bassist, guitarist, vocalist. And I think now I've done that, I've achieved that. So we're all very happy as a unit, as a band. So me personally, that's how I got involved. I mean, but Ivan here has been in music a long, long time. He's got a lot of experience. He's worked on cruise ships. Well, he'll tell you himself. He's got a lot more experience.
Yeah, we've been around 20 years working, but more covers. And now we had an opportunity for this original project. And Tom writes very well. He had all the songs. I was the last to get in the band. So I got everything ready. For me, it was easier. I got them very, very easy.
You guys have got a really multicultural band happening here, because there's some of you who couldn't be here for this interview. Why don't you tell us about the people who aren't here as well?
Yeah, of course. Oh. Well, there's Ashley, of course, Ashley Cooper, who was supposed to come today, but he's had a back injury last week, and it's pretty bad back injury. He's recovering. And we had a gig Sunday night, which he couldn't attend. We had to get a session musician in, who works with us regularly, in case, you know, he keeps up the speed with all the songs, so he had to fill in for us. So Ashley had to go to a physio today. It didn't work out for him. So Ashley is from the UK, he's British. And then there's Alessandra, who's Italian. And there's Mauro, the other guitarist. He's Italian also. So yeah, it is pretty multicultural. And it blends a lot of different cultures and ideas together to bring about what Emerald is, I suppose, today. You know.
So is that a benefit, having people from different cultures, so you can, you know, do a bit of variety?
I believe so. I mean, I've never worked... This is my only original band I've ever worked in, so I don't know what it's like to work in a singular ethnic group. So for me, I see a benefit. I see different ideas. I see different avenues of creativity. So, and the blends of people's different ideas does come together. I mean, and I have to be honest, the guys in the band are very, very high-level musicians, you know, on their instruments, and they're pretty smart as well when it comes to bringing the music into the studio and the creative side, and I'm making it all work. So, yeah, I have to say, personally for Emerald, it's worked very well. I'm very happy with what we've got.
So who decided on the name Emerald?
I did. I mean, that's got the Irish background to the Emerald Isle. So I always said if I'm going to start an original project and if I had the opportunity to do it, I'd call a band Emerald. I just like the name, and yeah, it's stuck well with us, I think.
I think you were quite lucky to get it, and also with a reasonably easy website address as well, like emeraldrock.net. It's pretty easy. I thought with a common name such as Emerald, you'd have a bit of a hard time.
Yeah, we're quite lucky because Emerald was taken up on everything. Just Emerald was taken up. So I thought, well, you know, I have to call it Double Barrel, Emerald something. Or even though the band is called Emerald, it's singular. You have to obviously use a double barrel name for the website address. So I thought, well, Emerald Rock sounds about right. And went on the website, see if I could register it. And yeah, it was available. And it came about and registered, and that's it. So the website is Emerald Rock. Yeah.
One of the things... Sorry, go ahead.
So that's it. No, I was just finishing off that statement about the... and the same on MySpace, it's Emerald Rock as well. So we've stuck both. We've kept it Emerald Rock as an address. So it's cool, yeah.
Good idea, because that's one of the things that can be really difficult for bands is getting that online identity right. You know, on MySpace, you're, you know, one group, and you've got your own website, and then you've got Facebook or whatever. And I know with me personally, I hate mentioning website addresses on the show. You know, I try and refer people back to the show notes because, you know, you get some bands that have got difficult names, and then you start spelling things out, then you start making even more mistakes than I do on an ordinary basis anyway. So I always refer people to the show notes, you know, and it's not to say that I'm not promoting the bands, it's just easier that way. It sort of sounds better to do it that way. And speaking of your website, it's a great website. Who came up with the logo? It's one of the things that I mentioned when I played you guys originally.
I did. I came up with the whole thing, actually. See, with me, I'm not really, I suppose, the easiest way to put it, I'm not a true and true musician, as in where the guys have been musicians all their lives. They've started off with music. I mean, in Ireland, when I was studying, I learned traditional instruments like bowron, flute, and tin whistle. But obviously, they're not major instruments. So for me, when I started the band, I looked at it more as a business. Getting the business end of its side, because music is one of the biggest industries in the world. So I wanted to get a good name, a good commercial name, which could, you know, easy to remember, catchy name, and also devise a good logo. So I looked at the business sense, I wanted to get something good, and I had someone design it. So, yeah, I mean, that's the reason why that it came about, really, you know. So I wanted something good, effective, and people remembered it.
Why don't you describe the logo for us? Because I can say, and you'd probably be better off to describe it and the inspiration behind it.
It's funny, actually. The logo, actually, probably most people would know it from the originality of it. It's from the SAS logo. Who dares wins. It's their logo, and it's exactly like, some very similar like that. It's got the wings, and it's got the towers coming out, and it's got a sword coming out the bottom. But it's got that logo engraved across the bottom part, which says "Who dares wins," and it's a famous logo. For the SAS, which is obviously the Special Forces military over in Britain. So I took that and I thought, oh, that looks good, I like that. We can just redo it, make it like more musical style and put Who Dares Rocks into it. I thought, yeah, that could be quite catchy. So, you know, that's where it actually came from.
And then, of course, instead of the sword, you've got the neck of the guitar, which is an awesome look.
Exactly, yeah. We just tweaked it a bit, so obviously it was obviously designed for... for the music as a logo for the band. So, yeah, I was very happy with it. And people generally like it, you know. And so very few people actually have actually come up and said, oh, yeah, actually, have you taken that from the SAS, you know, the whole concept? And a couple of people said that to me and said, yeah, we've obviously tweaked and Who Dares Wins is now Who Dares Rocks. And people laughed, say, yeah, good one.
Yes, so, yeah. I did indeed actually did get that reference, and I was going to call the episode that you guys were on something totally different altogether, and then when I was going through the websites before the show, because I have all the different websites open in different tabs so I can talk a bit about each artist, I saw that, and I actually changed the name of the episode to Who Rocks Wins, so there you go.
Good one. So you picked up on a nice one, yeah. That's exactly what it is. And I think it's a true statement for music, you know what I mean? I think you create your own look in music. If you sit around and waiting for someone to come and say, hey guys, you know what I mean, you're good, let's sign you up, it's not going to happen. You've got to go out there and you've got to work as hard as you can, work your socks off, basically, and create your own look. And that, I think the logo reflects that. It means Who Dares Rocks, and it's same thing. It's exactly the same principle. You've got to go out there and make it happen, and that's what we believe in.
Absolutely, Sam. So now is a good time as any to play a song, because one of the things that I believe in these interviews, it's fine to talk to the band and everything like that, but it's another thing to hear them. So why don't one of you guys tell us a bit about Take It Alone?
Sorry. Make It Alone, yeah, I mean, that's my personal favourite. I wrote that because basically when I started Emerald, when I formed Emerald, I mean, a lot of people say, yeah, it's a passing thing, you know, it's never going to happen. There's so many bands out there, and you know, if you have to have something special, and it's the usual, you know, people don't have a lot of faith in you when you're trying to start something like that. And Make It Alone is just saying, look, listen, if you believe in something, work at it, put all your faith in it, and if you really believe in something strong enough, you can make it happen. And that's what Make It Alone is really about. Just saying, right, listen, I believed in it. It's something out of nothing. It's getting somewhere now, and yeah. Things can happen if you believe strongly enough in it, and that's what Make It Alone is about.
So here we are, Make It Alone by Emerald here on IRC FM.
Gotta be strong, 'cause maybe you believe that I'm wrong.
You're listening to Irk FM episode 73, and we're chatting with a couple of members from the band Emerald. Their song you just heard was called Make It Alone. Now, who does all the songwriting? Is it a collaborative effort between all the members of the band?
No, actually, in fact, the first album, Master M, which obviously you've got the tracks from, I've totally wrote everything for it, the music, the lyrics, everything. Because, I mean, when I started the project in the beginning, I actually had a lot of stuff already done. And when we came together as a band, I just said, right, listen, I've started the album now, I'll put in another couple of tracks, but I worked on another couple of tracks, got 8 songs together, and put it together. And then we recorded ourselves. We've got our own recording studio. We've got our own private recording studio. So we recorded it. We mixed it ourselves mainly. And then we've done a lot of production ourselves, in fact. And we sent it to Italy to a mastering engineer who's highly recommended with this type of music. And he done a great job for us. Very happy. And done a little bit of extra production on the album itself. So, yeah, so the mastering and our debut album was actually all written by myself. But the next album, of course, it's going to be more of a collective effort.
So how much easier would it have been to be in your own to have the luxury of your own studio compared to having to go commercial and that sort of thing? Would have been a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you just look at the finances alone, the financial aspect of going outside to record a debut album, you know, you're asking 5 guys in a band to chip in at least 5 grand each. You're 25 grand to produce anything that's of quality, you know, because studio time is very expensive. And a lot of the time you're actually paying for the reputation, the name of the studio, more so than what you're going to get out of it. So, and unfortunately, a lot of studios are like that. And the UK, obviously, being one of the most biggest commercial markets in the world, studios are very expensive. So to find somewhere that's reasonably priced to produce an album, it's going to be a very hit-and-miss thing. So, I mean, lucky enough, having our own studio, we took out 90% of the cost. And I made the investment in the studio, put the equipment in there, bought some fantastic equipment. I mean, but it was a big investment to begin with, but, you know, obviously long term it's worth it. But you can see the quality of the sound we've produced and everything else. So it's been a very worthwhile investment. And obviously having the comfort of being able to walk within 2 minutes of where you live to walk into your studio and be relaxed about it and not having any time constraints to actually produce something and be out the door, it's fantastic. It's a much more relaxed atmosphere. Everyone's happier, and it really is. You can't beat it if you can afford to do it. I highly recommend it to anybody. But obviously, you know, there's a lot of implications about going outside to do it. It is a lot of financial burden, so that obviously has to take in consideration. So yeah, it's fantastic. We're very happy.
And then, of course, you've got the amount of people that are in the band, and it would be a lot easier to get everyone together at a more mutually agreeable time rather than what time the studio can take you on.
Well, that's what I said. I mentioned about the time constraints. You know, that there is that with a studio. Time is money, and if you turn up late, you've already lost some time. You've still got to pay for it. Which, where we have our own studio, like you say, we can come at any time. The door is always open with the key. We have it, so there's no problems there at all. It's so much more relaxed, and the equipment inside is always set up to what we're doing. It's got our own signature, so there's no fiddling around with equipment, you know, wasting time doing that. So it's beautiful. It is a really, as a musician, it's probably a dream come true to have your own studio, to be honest.
And it's exactly the same as podcasting. For the first year or so, I was always, you know, setting up equipment, taking it down because I didn't have a permanent space. But now I've got a permanent space, I can just get in here, you know, turn the equipment on, it's all set, and just go. And it is just so much better. So I can see how for a band that'd be multiplied.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the early days, we've rehearsed, because we rehearsed in the studio as well, but in the early days, when we're rehearsing outside in different studios, it's an absolute nightmare. You never know what sort of equipment you're going to get, what sort of drum kit, what sort of amps, and then you're fiddling around with PAs that don't work. It's the usual for all bands suffer it, you know what I mean? And if you can get away from that, it's such an enlightenment, really. It really is. Working with great equipment, no fiddling around. When you come in, you get your sound as it was all the time. It's fantastic, you know, it really is.
That's awesome. So how do you come up with your song ideas? What are your inspirations?
It varies. It could be anything. You could be watching TV and you might think something, oh, you could write about that. Or you might listen to music and you think, oh, you know, I like that sort of idea there. And it gets you thinking. It's just, I mean, for me personally, I actually, at night, late at night, I come up with an idea and I think, oh, I'm going to write about that. Or maybe I'll dream of a riff or maybe a melody. I get up and I'll put on a dictaphone and I'll hum it to myself or something like that. And the next day I'll work on it. So it could be anything. I've got no set marker for making music, to be honest with you. It can happen anyway.
And that's a thing that I've not noticed talking to several of the bands. They'll have something like a dictaphone or a mobile phone or at the very least a pen and paper handy, because yeah. You never know when you're going to be inspired. I haven't really come across someone yet who has had a dedicated writing session. I haven't spoken to anyone like that for a while that's had dedicated writing sessions. Most of it's, you know, what you see, and sometimes you get some inspiration in some strange and unusual places.
Yeah, exactly. That's very true. I mean, for me personally, it doesn't tend for me to come just as inspiration from something I've done or something I've seen. It's more at night, and I'll think of something or I'll dream of something, because I'm quite an insomniac. Actually, I don't sleep very well at night a lot of the time, and my head is very active at night, so I do tend to dream a lot or go around in my head about music and stuff like that, and I'll come up with something and I remember that and I put it down. That's how Make It Alone came along, actually. The riff came up in my head and I thought, yeah, I like that, and then I started working on it. The next day I worked some more and the song came about, and then I thought, yeah. And then actually the lyrics came about something I really wanted to work about, because in life very few people will actually encourage you to do something or give you that kind of support that you need. Everyone's kind of more, a lot of people are very self-centered, so you got to work hard for yourself to get where you want to be, and that's exactly, like I said, how that song came about, you know. But for me personally, that's how it works.
So what's the difference for you between performing live and performing in the studio?
Oh, well, I suppose if you ask any musician, it's got to be the buzz. There's a great buzz playing live. You don't get that in the studio. I mean, because in studio it's routine. You go to the studio, whether it's practice, it's routine. When you go up and play live, it's not routine. You know what I mean? Everything has to be spot on. You have to be more focused. And, of course, you have to be relaxed with that. But the buzz you get when you've got to play into a crowd and you see they're enjoying, they're responding to what you're doing, it's that really is. It's so much more focused and it's so much more enjoyable just because of that alone. I love, and playing live, nothing develops you as an artist, as a musician, than playing live. You can spend all the hours you want in a studio studying, learning. But going out and playing live develops you so much. It's the only way. And that, for any artist, you've got to get out there and play live as much as you can, because you really will develop as an artist no matter what you play. It doesn't matter.
So how do both of you mentally and physically prepare for a performance?
Ivan, how do you prepare mentally for a performance?
Oh, yeah, the energy, the people there is I believe the people is an exchange of energy. When we go on the stage and all the people there, we have a responsibility to make it happen. And so I think it works together. It's a exchange of energy with the crowd, and that's amazing. I love to the live thing, to play live. I prefer the studio. You have to work on the perfection. You have to get the best of you. The voice has to sound nice, has to sound strong, has to sound... And life is that energy. You have to bring that energy to the people, and that's how it goes.
Eric, he's got a really funny way of warming up before. He does. Have you seen Predator? The movie Predator?
Yeah.
He does the thing.
The noise.
That's what he does. That's how he does for his show.
Yes, to get warm. Warm, dude.
You wouldn't want to hear that in the back of a van going to a show, I tell you.
No, but it's always interesting to find out how people prepare to perform. And, of course, it would also depend on, you know, if you're a singer or if you play an instrument or whatever. So it's always interesting to find out the difference. So how does a drummer warm up? They just play for a while and...
Well, that's me, actually. It's funny because a lot of drummers actually do rudiments on a pad or on a seat or a cushion, something for it to warm up. But me, I never actually, I never do anything. I just go up and maybe tap, use my actually my wrist, just tap my knees a couple of times to warm up. But I've never had any problems. You know, I've always, obviously, you're going to start off with a very high octane, high tempo song. I mean, obviously, it's worth obviously sleeping with your wrist, how you open the show. But generally, I don't do anything. Have a drink, one drink, that's about it. We all have a bit of banter before we go on stage. But I think everyone's generally very relaxed. That's one thing I find about Emerald. Very relaxed. Everyone's very relaxed. There doesn't seem to be any nerves or anything that, you know. Obviously, we haven't played any major shows yet, but I don't think that's ever been a factor. I mean, when we played in India, we played to a lot of people at that time, but no, I haven't seen any. I haven't seen any cause for concern with nerves, things like that. People very relaxed. So, yeah, I don't know. Mentally, it's yeah, very confident. There's never any issue there at all, to be honest.
So tell us a little. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm getting some feedback from myself, which is sort of putting me off. Tell us a little bit about performing in India. How did that come about?
Well, that came about. We had some sponsorship from Fila, and one of the agents that worked with Fila was located in India. He distributed Fila across India. He came to see us play live in the UK, and he said, "Well, I really like what you're doing. I love this music, and any chance we can get you over to India for a show?" And it was really just at the inception of Emerald time. It just had started. So Evan wasn't around at that time. We had another vocalist who I just got together at the time, and so I prepared the set list, prepared the music I had wrote at the time, and we said, we can go over and obviously do a short list, set list, because we don't have all that much material. We've only got together. And we had a date, which was in, I think it was August 2007 we went over. And we prepared for, we had 3 months, 4 months preparation for it. The band only really recently got together. So we put ourselves a big task, you know, together to get the time, a very short notice. And we went over there. It was all our expenses were taken care of by this agent in India. Everything was taken, transport, hotels. We got there, played to a crowd of Bollywood celebrities, a big audience. We had over a sit-down meal, and it was very exclusive. And to be honest with you, I was kind of apprehensive about it, because I didn't know rock or metal was kind of on the scene in India at the time. And so I thought, well, you know, it'll be an experience for us. Get together and we'll do a gig as Emerald and see how it goes. And my God, they absolutely loved the show, the rock. The response was amazing. At the end of the show, they were demanding more. Everyone was out dancing, and we had to do an encore, come back and play two songs again. We had a standing ovation, and we got off the stage. So I was actually overwhelmed. I couldn't believe the response we got. It's absolutely amazing. So yes, I mean that was our experience in India. Fantastic.
It would have been a lot different from growing up in Ireland. Had you ever thought of even going to India, let alone playing in a band over there?
I never even thought of going to the UK at that stage, never mind going to India. Yeah, I mean, music can bring you anywhere, but I suppose you don't expect it to bring you to India so quickly, from just starting an original project within a couple of months and actually heading out of London and going to India that quickly, you know, on the back of a whim. And that's how it happened. And it was, and actually, funny enough, I don't like traveling by airplane. I actually hate it.
Oh,
actually.
My gosh.
And this guy, Ivan, beside me, he's worse. He absolutely detests it. And actually, the other guitarist is the same. So, I mean, it's funny, because three guys in the band hate traveling, but they know we have to do it and it has to be done.
It'll be fun.
For drinks. So we do it. Anyway. But yeah, going to India was an absolute amazing experience. We're going back there again in March. So I'm really looking forward to that. So, you know, India is great. Yeah, really, it's a fantastic experience. I was delighted to have been there and going back, definitely.
So, what were you thinking when you got off the plane? Were you prepared for what was gonna happen?
Not really. It's definitely a culture shock, and everyone that says there that goes there for the first time always says that, you know, testify to being a culture shock. You can't be prepared, even if people do tell you, you know, what the situation is like. You think, yeah, it can't be that bad. But when you go there, you see that it is that bad, you know, and it is a culture shock. And the first thing you notice when you get off the plane is the pounding heat. It's so hot. It's unbelievable. I suppose you're used to it in Australia at the moment, the heat you're getting. But it's for me, coming from the summers we get in Ireland, or even in the UK at 19 degrees, it's like an Indian summer here. But we go over there and you're getting 42, 45 degrees. Wow.
It's always roasting.
Yeah, it's an experience just alone to get off the plane and feel that heat. But then when you go, obviously, come out of the airport and you see the actual obvious poverty that's around, and hard life that people have. It's an eye-opener, it really is, you know what I mean? So, but the people, I have to say, they do everything they do with a smile on their face. So I've got to take my hat off to them for that. And they're happy doing what they do. So it's a great experience, fantastic eye-opener. And I love the country, really do.
So are you more prepared to go back next time?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm aware of what the culture is like, and I know nothing's going to obviously surprise or shock me that I haven't seen more or less already. And my favourite food is Indian food, so I mean, I had a whale of a time when I was there, actually. I ate all around me. I think I came back about a stone heavier. I was only there 5 days. So it's great. I mean, yeah, it's a fantastic experience. But definitely prepared again, for sure, yeah. We're going to be there a little bit longer, obviously, with the 5-city tour. But, yeah, I'm definitely prepared, looking forward to it.
It's interesting, because in a few weeks I'll be having a Indian special, and while you have Indian people in the UK and we have a lot of Indian people who come to Australia, you know, there's probably nothing, you know, it's probably nothing like being over there. So Yvonne, tell us a bit about coming from Brazil and coming to the UK. That would have been a bit of a difference for you.
Oh yeah, a few things. We have a lot of English culture there. I grew up listening to English music, like bands. I grew up listening to Beatles, to rock, even U2, Irish. Now when I came here, I learned the other side. I started to to go deeper in the culture, in the things. Started to like Thin Lizzy and other bands that I didn't know, and then suddenly I'm more mixed. Yeah, familiarized with everything. So it's for me it's amazing too. It's a new learning. I'm bringing my experience and mixing with the guys, and it's something new. I believe we always bring something new and. We have something original, something different.
Now, Thomas was talking a bit about the cultural shock when he went to India. Did you have much of a cultural shock when you went to the UK?
Not that much. Maybe a bit.
Fast pace.
We love fish and chips in Brazil. So.
What does that mean? Nah, it's hard to get fish and chips wrong. Have you managed to drag the rest of the guys back to Brazil?
Oh yeah, I'm making some contacts. Who knows? We get something in the future. Something in Brazil as well.
What's the music scene like over there? I did a special last year that I called the Urk FM Musical United Nations Tour. And I featured various music from various continents using the online music source Jamendo, just to see what sort of music I could get out there. What's the music scene over there like, from what you can remember?
In Brazil?
Yeah.
Yeah, there depends on the if you. There are a lot of diversity of music there. Tom was playing Brazilian music a few days ago. I got a gig. And I invited him to play the drums, and we played some Brazilian songs. And is there a lot of how can I say? We have axé, forró, a lot of different kind of vaneirão. So depends on the place that I came from is São Paulo. So we have a mix. We have everything there. So it's very it's huge. It's a lot of influences, including we have English music, we have Italian music, a lot of, it's really a mix there. We have samba, bossa nova, we have axé.
Brazilian rock.
And Brazilian rock, of course, yeah.
It's really quite interesting to hear some of the music, because unless you go looking for it, the music isn't going to necessarily come and find you. How have you guys used things like social networking and the internet to get your music out there?
I've used it quite a lot, and we're using it more now, actually, because we said 2010 we're going to obviously maximise the kind of work output and do start make a lot more contacts and networking and do it that way. So yeah, I mean, things like Facebook and MySpace, they all have their benefits if you use it right and obviously put the work into developing your contacts on online that way. But it helps to a point. You know, you've got to do a lot of other things as well. So I mean, we're working on a single to release in May of 2010. So we're actually doing quite a big PR campaign. We've already contacted a company over here in the UK who's going to drive the campaign for 3 months and release the single. So that's what we're looking at the moment. But obviously all the basics about networking and making up contacts, like Facebook and MySpace, them things, that's all been done anyway, behind the scenes, you know, obviously. But it's also the broader picture, obviously, is working with people who already have contacts. And that's the thing. But unfortunately, you know, nothing's for nothing. It does cost a lot of money. So, you obviously have to pay for these things. And 2010, that's what we're going to do. You know, we're going to invest actually a bit more in actually the business side of it and get our stuff material out there to the wider audience. And we know we have to, the only way to do that is to get the right people in who already have the contacts and the power to do that. And that's what we're doing. That's the way we're going to do it.
So it sounds like that you've got your head securely fastened to your shoulders and things are all go, go, go for 2010.
Yeah, pretty optimistic about 2010, to be honest with you. I mean, like I said, we're working on the new material, and personally, I believe it's a lot stronger, and it's got more of an Emerald signature now. It's more unique to what we're doing, you know. I think obviously as you progress with your band and your music, normally progresses with you, and it's going to be a little bit different. But I'm really excited about the new music we're writing now, and particularly the single. The single is, I think, it's just going to be really, really strong in a commercial sense, and that's why we're taking the single. We're going to have record it in March, and we're going to have it campaigned in May to our PR company, and obviously see what happens with that. So yeah, all thumbs up for that. I think things are quite positive. We've got a lot of gigs coming in. We're still booking gigs in. We're getting great gigs coming in, quality shows now, and we're looking to get some good support slots as well. So. Doing all the right things, you know what I mean, the basics, because you can't neglect the basics, but obviously try to minimise the mistakes and not go down the road of making the mistakes of what other people make, or, you know, and obviously just do the right things. So, but it's a learning experience. We want to stay independent for as long as we can to actually learn the industry. So when we're ready, we can obviously look at getting in a high-profile management or maybe even a good record label when we're ready and to go with it, so we do get a good deal. So but that is the aim. 2010 is definitely the year we're looking at making something happen for us now.
So the aim, hopefully, is to be able to do this full-time and, you know, not have to rely on a day gig like so many other bands do?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, if you look at any manual ever written by any management or any kind of guidance for musicians, it doesn't say go out and do as many gigs as you possibly can, because that doesn't seem to be the way, you know what I mean? If you can do one quality gig, as opposed to doing 10 crap ones, you know, that's what matters, you know, and preparation, you know what I mean? It's not like being prepared, because when an opportunity comes, you have to be prepared, and you can be prepared. You put the time into the studio and get ready as a band, you should be prepared. There's no reason why you shouldn't be. But it's about obviously keeping momentum going. Very important to keep momentum going as a band, keep everybody enthused, you know, keep the vision high and keep the enthusiasm there. And obviously book good quality gigs in, so because you don't want to take 10 steps forward and a step back and go out and play a bad gig just because you couldn't be bothered and not, you know, couldn't be bothered to go out and put a bit of extra work and get a good gig in. So we're looking at gigs where we're going to go out where it's going to be a good venue, where we can pull a good crowd and get our fan base down and really make a good show of it. You know, because we've done obviously bad gigs in the past and we've gone past that. So we want to obviously focus on quality all the way. So, but actually, it's all a learning experience.
So, is there a crowd favourite? Is there a song that your fans really love?
Yvonne probably knows. Yvonne, is there a song you've noticed everyone seems to like more than the others?
I believe this song, "Make It Alone," when we play live, is huge. The people, because it's kind of groovy. Is a has a
it's uplifting.
Yeah,
it?
It's a beat. It's, and I personally I like Master I Am as well, because it's very strong, it's very, and this BBC thing that was on the snooker, and you feel different when you,
yeah.
you start to look different at the song, and are my favorite ones as well.
Tell us a little bit about the BBC's Snooker thing.
Well, yeah, that was on recently. That was on in January. It's the biggest tournament in the UK. It's an invite tournament, and it's run by BBC One. It's called the Master Snooker Championship, and it's run annually. And this year, they just happened to take one of our songs, which is the title track from our album Master. And they took the song and made it one of their official theme tunes for the series until it ran to the final. Obviously, it's apt because the trophy is called Master Trophy, and the series is called the Master Snooker. So, and the song being Master Am, and the whole thing suited their whole vision for it. Was very apt the way they actually edited and put it together to show. So, I mean, and we were absolutely delighted because, I mean, BBC One is the biggest, one of the biggest broadcasting channels TV in the world, and this is the viewership of the Snooker Championship is watched on millions. So we got fantastic exposure from that, you know. And we obviously we put some royalties from it as well, so we're very, 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 very happy about that. It's good to see you can get a break like that, you know, from a major commercial TV station taking one of your tracks. It's a big boost to everyone's confidence.
So how do they find you guys in the first place?
Well, I mean, we've set up a lot of shop windows basically where people can find us, where find our music, and take it, whatever it be, from music supervisors or iTunes and different forums, different accounts. Basically, we've put our music everywhere so people can notice it and find it, and you know, just come across it even, you know what I mean? You may not even be looking for it, but you know, we want it to be where people are just looking for music in general, classic rock and pop emerald. So that's, we're trying to cover every avenue where people can find our music. And like I say, we're getting exposure. People are talking about Emerald now. They're talking about our music. So I don't know for sure where they've got it from, but you know, they could have been recommended to them. Or they could have just heard it somewhere. They could have found it doing a type search for their music. So I don't know where they actually found it. I didn't speak to them directly. It was that this is a that's been sorted out with PRS for music on this side of the royalty company. But you know, wherever they got it from, the fact is they did manage to get it and have used it, and that's the important thing.
It must have been a great feeling, you know, for a short amount of time that you guys have been together musically. You've had some great success. You've had that campaign. You've had the India tour with the one later to come. So, for a young band, you guys have achieved a lot compared to some other bands who haven't, even though they may have been in the industry a lot longer.
Yeah, but that's all down to, see, the thing is, you have to have one or two things. You either have to have someone who within the band is going to drive the band on a business sense, on a business level. Or you're going to have someone to come in as a manager who's going to take that role on and actually drive the band forward, make things happen. In this case, it's me, obviously. I've taken the role on as being a band member and band manager. And in some respects, it takes a lot of the enjoyment away from me because it's a lot of hard work. I've got to spend a lot of time each day doing the role of a manager and on sorting out a lot of stuff and getting the band opportunities and finding opportunities, communicating with people, and making contacts, and just doing an everyday job as a manager would do. So that's what I'm doing, and that's why there is so much momentum in Emerald, because I put a lot of work into doing that. But yeah, I mean, that's where a lot of bands lack. There's nobody, one particular person driving the band, and a lot. I mean, personally, I think that, I mean, I don't think you can have an open diplomatic universal situation in a band where three or four or five different members make decisions in a band, because I just don't believe it works. You have to have one person making decisions and going with it. Because, for instance, if you have two or three people agreeing one thing and two other people don't, I mean, what do you do? Do you take the majority and go down that road, and then after 3 months it hasn't worked, then you go back to and try the other two people's vision and then you go with that? I mean, you waste a lot of time doing that. If you believe in somebody, let them take the role on, let them guide the band, and let them take it forward. It's a way to put the hard work in. You can't spend time investigating different avenues just for the sake of someone's opinion. You've got to go with one direction. And I believe very firmly in that.
That is some great advice, and some bands would be, you know, some bands should definitely hear that sort of message. So to finish off, why don't we hear another song? Master I Am by Emerald. Thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Ivan, for being here. I know it's very early in the morning for me, but it's very cold for you guys. But
Well, thank you very much. We are very delighted to have been on European Classic Rock Radio. And on behalf of Emerald and all the guys, myself and Yvonne, thank you very much. We love the show. We love what you're doing. And we think you're the best.
Yeah.
Anyway, we think you're the best.
No worries. So here we go with Master I Am by Emerald. Keep an eye out for these guys. Don't forget, guys, that in the future, you know, when you get an album out or a new single or even for your tour, let us know and we'll give you another play. There's not a problem about that in the world.
Oh, absolutely. I say that we're releasing and promoting this single in May, so we'll contact you as soon as that's ready, send you a copy over of that so you can have first hand of that song. Absolutely, guaranteed.
Awesome, sounds good. So on behalf of Emerald and on behalf of myself, I'm Erk. You've been listening to episode 73 of Erk FM. More great music on Friday down the pipe and into your ears. But until then, good night, Interweb. I'll be looking for all my love is You have been listening to a Channel Irk production. Channel Irk and all five podcasts are licensed under a Creative Commons non-commercial, non-derivative, share-alike license registered in Australia. Music is used with direct permission or under agreements with various music providers. All rights to the music contained within remains with the original rights holder. Some sound effects are sourced from the Free Sound Project under Creative Commons. For more information about Channel Irk, go to www.channelirk.com.